What's up, Beardos? In today's episode, we'll be talking about the future we want.
Basically, our whole philosophy boils down to don't be a jerk.
Don't answer the question first try. Not answering the question. I really hope people didn't tune in to hear us talking about beards.
Welcome to the show. I am Andy.
And I'm Paul.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com, and you can reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
Oh, Paul, I am so excited to have this discussion with you today. I think it's going to be a little messy, a little sloppy, really fun, but covering a bunch of different ideas that we've had just sort of floating around in our heads, and we're congealing them into this one episode. And I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about everything.
Me too, Andy. I think this episode came about because you said, Paul, I got a really good idea for a title of an episode. And gosh dang it, Andy, it's a great title. And we both said, that seems like it would make a really good episode. Let's figure out how to make an episode. This is a very rare occurrence where the title came first and the episode came after.
I believe that is how the film Friday the 13th came about, actually. Like, they had this ominous sounding title first before any sort of anything came about with the script. So this is our Friday the 13th, Paul.
Andy, I think, also, I love that. Did not know. And Andy, I'll quickly mention that we have a important show announcement at the end of this podcast. So make sure you listeners stick around and listen to that. But the future we want, Andy, what the heck does that mean?
Well, I think that this episode title is sort of this umbrella term that's going to allow us to talk about a bunch of different ideas that we have had over the years, things that we've explored a little bit, but things we haven't really elaborated upon. And I also gave this as a bit of a teaser in last week's episode. But essentially, I feel, Paul, that so often we get mired down in the negative. And I think that a lot of that is just by virtue of the fact that it's more interesting to discuss things that there are issues with. And, you know, not that people can't celebrate the things that they like. We also do that on the show. But it's probably just more compelling content for us and more interesting for us to talk about things that we're like, ooh, we have kind of a problem with this. And I think by an extension of that, it means that we're often kind of telling people what not to do. And we're like, don't do this thing. This thing's horrible. Burn this thing to the ground. And so rarely are we actually talking about what do we actually want? What is the future we want? What is the world that we're trying to step into? And so today I want to explore that. Like, what is the world that we're trying to step into? I want to talk about that briefly, but much more importantly to me, at least, is what are the things that we can do to start practicing that world, like the way we behave, the way we think about things, the way we take action on things? I think that's really what I'm most interested in trying to get at here.
Andy, I think you said something good, which was, let's actually define like the future that we want for, like, what is it? What does that even mean? Because I know that we've said this a lot on the podcast, but not in every single episode. So I want to define it right now. You know, a lot of vegan activists, I feel like, talk about this, the vegan world. And we say it too. We say, you know, like, well, in a vegan world, there wouldn't be animal testing, so I don't need to worry about that, blah, blah, blah. In a vegan world, this, this, and that. And I think one of the things, at least for me, that has changed throughout the course of this podcast has been that I'm less interested. I know I'm like using Andy talking points right here. This is something that I can just literally hear you saying, and I feel bad about that sometimes, but I feel bad that I'm like plagiarizing you, but also I'm like, Andy, the stuff you say resonates with me a lot. So I'm just going to say it anyways.
Paul, you know, over the years, we have become one. We are congealing together.
I like that. I guess, over time, over the course of this podcast, I feel like I'm less interested in just getting to solely a vegan world and more interested in getting to a world that is, you know, free of any sort of oppression or any sort of exploitation and those sorts of things. And certainly veganism is a part of that. But I guess the distinction is it's that veganism will fall into place as a result of these greater efforts that we're making.
Yeah. I agree with that, Paul. I think that obviously from the start of this podcast, of course, we wanted a world free of oppression, but of all oppressions, of all systems of oppression, of all domination, etc. But I think that, yeah, we definitely fell into that trap of always saying in a vegan world. And that, like, over the years we've shifted. I think we still do use that kind of shorthand to mean something, but I also think that we've shifted, at least for me, a lot more to saying, like, I'm looking for, like, a just and equitable world. But to the point of this episode, I guess, when I think about that world, I'm like, oh, I think about this world that is free of racism, sexism, white supremacy, patriarchy, etc. But I'm actually not thinking about what is filling up that world. I'm just thinking about, like, what is not a part of that world. And I guess maybe that's my own shortcoming there. But I think I want to start thinking about much more, like, how are we treating each other as individuals in that world? How are we interacting? How are we moving forward and progressing even further in that world? But to your point, yes, I agree that there's much more of an endpoint than just a vegan world.
I think that's a really important thing to point out. I really like that, Andy.
Paul, throughout the podcast, I feel like we really try to impress upon people that we are not trying to be experts on anything. We're not trying to be authority figures. We're not trying to claim that we are the first people that have thought of, like, any of these ideas. And so I guess I'm just going to put that caveat in right now as well. And I've definitely said this many times over the course of the podcast, but, like, our desire for you, the listener, is not to listen to this episode and be like, oh, I need to follow these steps. These are the 8 points that the Beard Vegans say we have to do to have a better world or whatever it is. Like, we want you to, like, actively engage in what we're saying. We want you to think about it. We want you to take with you what resonates, and you can leave what doesn't. Or what doesn't resonate, you can talk about with your friends and neighbors and family members and figure out, like, what is the better alternative for that. So, later on, I think I want to talk about why I feel the need to drop that caveat, but I do want to put it right here up front before we, like, really get into this.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Andy. And I also think, you know, sometimes I feel like just from the nature of this is a podcast, and I guess some might say one of the purposes of a podcast is for others to listen to it. But I do want to say, like, when we were just talking about, for instance, my reaction to you saying, oh yeah, we sometimes lose sight of what would be in the future as opposed to what wouldn't be in the future. And Andy, my reaction to that was genuinely like, oh yeah, I do that sometimes. And like, that is something that I personally need to work on. So that's one thing that I really love about this podcast, Andy, is that I feel like it has really helped me to reflect on a lot of things. So I hope that, I do hope, just to go along with what you're saying, that the listeners don't think that I think that I'm an expert in these things or I'm telling people, you know, what they should do, because I'm just trying to learn as well.
And Paul, let me just sort of throw that out there as what I think is one of the important bullet points, as it were, about the future that I am looking for. Because, you know, I've seen this in many different activist spaces and movements that I've, you know, swam in and out of over the years. But obviously, I'm most intimately familiar with, like, the vegan movement. And I feel like so much of coming into veganism and also coming into vegan activism, we just sort of look at it as a list of rules to learn or a list of talking points to memorize. And, you know, I get that, because I am very much a rule follower. I'm like, please somebody tell me how to live the most perfect ethical life and I will just follow your instructions, and therefore I am good and I am absolved from all culpability in these systems, etc. But I feel like we do not place nearly enough emphasis in the mainstream vegan movement, at least, of trying to foster this atmosphere, one, where it's okay to not know things, two, where it's okay to like think about things, think about the talking points that you've been taught, whether it's researching figures that are often like thrown out there in like the vegan world, or just sort of like the vegan party line, so to speak. Because I, you know, I have found that when I'm entering into like in my, you know, later years when I've gotten more involved in like the fat liberation and stuff, I've realized that a lot of my entering into those spaces is not necessarily engaging and learning to think critically about stuff and understanding why I think certain things or why I'm supposed to think certain things. It's more like, oh, what is the perfect take that I'm supposed to have in order to fit in with this crowd, or yeah, to not be punished for having the wrong take, and trying to stay up to date on that and the perfect language and stuff. And even though those are goalposts that are constantly moving and it takes an immense amount of time for people to actually invest in and be up to date on that, but I just feel like within this movement, it's just all about learning those talking points, learning how to debate the best. And we're not really honoring people's ability to think critically, to develop their own moral compass, and to learn to act from that moral compass, as opposed to saying, I'm acting this way because I've been told I have to act this way. And obviously, with everything we're talking about today, there's going to be some gray areas, there's going to be some different lines and caveats and all that kind of stuff. But as like a general bullet point, I feel like we're failing so deeply in that regard. And so in the future that I want, you know, I'm thinking about this perfect, you know, egalitarian, stateless society, whatever it might be, that it is one in which we trust ourselves and our own intuition, and we're still learning from people that know much more than us and have way more life experience, different lived experience, have been thinking about these issues for longer. And we're taking that and we're incorporating it into our own ethics and understanding why we feel that way, as opposed to just sort of falling into that, you know, talking point trap.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you, Andy. I have a guess about why maybe this is prevalent in the vegan movement. And my guess is that because, you know, when you go vegan, you might be the only vegan that you know, or you might be one of just a couple vegans that you know. And something that we've talked about before is how one of the biggest, if not the biggest reason why people stop being vegan is because the societal pressures, they don't have that community to kind of support them, or they feel, you know, yeah, they feel pressure from non-vegans. And so I feel like because of all that, it probably makes someone who has just recently gone vegan want to be even more accepted by, you know, the group of vegans that they find. And they're like, or, you know, if they just started becoming an activist, the first kind of organization or movement that they're joining, you know, they want to be accepted in that thing because it's like, oh, these are the only vegans I know. These are the only vegan activists that I know. And I can certainly see why that would encourage someone to want to just go along with what everyone is saying. And so I think to combat that, it's all about, you know, community building and making your, whatever your group is, whatever your community is, whether that's your organization or your like physical location, you know, if we're talking about like Philadelphia vegans or something like that, making it like a welcoming place where you do foster these characteristics that you pointed out, critical thinking and kind of being open to being wrong and being open to having discussions with people and those sorts of things.
Yeah. And Paul, I think part of it is also just sort of the practical aspect in terms of veganism, of like adopting a plant-based diet for, you know, all of us that make that switch. It's a totally foreign thing for us to do. And it's kind of like, well, I want to learn what is the grocery list that I am supposed to memorize, and how do I not die while doing this? And so I get that there's obviously some amount of shared knowledge that is going to be passed on. And if I want to learn how to cook a certain dish, I'm going to Google and I'm going to, the vegan roadie is teaching me how to make fettuccine Alfredo or something like that. Like, I understand that is like absolutely, absolutely a part of it. And I agree that there's not enough emphasis placed on that And yes, with the newcomers, but even like people that are like long-term seasoned activists that perhaps don't feel like 100% in agreement with like everything that like every other vegan thinks or every other activist thinks, and like sort of fostering that atmosphere. And I do think that there are limits to that, right? Because I think some people could say, well, the logical conclusion of that is that you must welcome, you know, far right ideologues into your space, and that like that is the that's the understanding, welcoming kind of community. And I don't believe that that is the extension of that. I'm thinking of like that. It's a great quote from Christopher Sebastian, essentially saying that like no movement for liberation has ever been born out of conservative ideology, and that's like always to the detriment of a progressive movement if like conservatism kind of like invades it. So I fully believe that, I feel that that is like a really important thing for us to internalize. So don't listen to this and think I'm saying like absolutely all harmful people need to be welcomed into a space. But I think that there's like there's wiggle room in there for people to have these types of disagreements and to make that like a part of how we interact with our fellow human beings and how we behave with each other. And when I'm thinking about the future, this world that likely you and I will never be a part of, Paul, but maybe, who knows? I guess we're supposed to act as if we can be, and that's why we do what we do. But you know, like I'm thinking about the ways that we are handling disagreements or differences of opinion in these types of things. And I do think that we're just creating a group of rule followers who then take a lot of joy in punishing people who deviate from the norm. And to me, that's just sort of replicating other systems of like domination and oppression, like within our own activist spaces. And so I think the further we can move away from that in the way that we interact with our fellow humans and activists, it'll be for the better of the movement.
Andy, I absolutely agree with that. And I don't, and it like, I feel like it's easier said than done, but something that we should be working towards.
Yeah. And sort of like, I guess kind of the last little aspect of this that I kind of want to try to hammer home is that I know I've just said a bunch of times that we just think about veganism as this list of rules and we need to move away from that. And people might be saying, well, what does that mean if it's not just a list of like animals you shouldn't eat or wear or entertainment you should go see? You know, I think that something that we have strived to do over the last couple of years of the podcast, hopefully successfully, is to look at veganism less as a list of rules or a grocery list or something, and more as like an ethical framework through which we can kind of look at the world and ask, how does our actions today align with our morals and our ethics, and using veganism in that way, as opposed to thinking that's this like rigid form that we have to cram ourselves into. You know, I think it's like it's a beautiful thing when we can use that as framework and then align it with our ethics as well. You know, Paul, we had that whole conversation, I feel like a couple episodes ago, about emanating and our ethics emanating from our body. And I'm just sort of thinking about that. And the underlying point of that was essentially that veganism is not the starting point of my ethics. It's like it's a part of my ethics. And the ethics that emanate from my body hit that veganism, and then the light is refracted in different ways, and I may behave differently once I align those things. But yeah, I guess that's kind of my final thought on that.
No, I love that, Andy. And I forgot that we had that conversation. And as you were saying these things, I was about to bring that up if you didn't. What a joyful conversation that was.
You and I just sitting here emanating all day long.
So Andy, I feel like I wanted to bring up this point that almost when I thought of it, I'm like, oh, we're trying to think of things that are not us saying like, don't do this thing. And I was like, oh no, but I want to say this thing. So I'm going to say it anyways, and then I'm going to explain it. But I feel like it kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but I kept thinking like, I don't want to get caught up in this idea of the future that we want as this kind of perfect image in our mind where we compare everything to that image. And I guess I'm not saying that it's not good to have, you know, goals or anything like that, but I think that it can often or sometimes prevent us from celebrating the accomplishments that we have now in the present. And because I think, Andy, when a lot of people think of the vegan world, their image is, if you've seen the movie Carnage, it's this world where everyone is vegan, and it's like ridiculous that there was a time when everyone wasn't vegan. And I think sometimes, and I'll speak personally for myself, I compare the things that are happening now to that world. And I say, well, Andy, we've been guilty of saying this many, many times on the podcast, which is like, I guess it's better than that it happened than it didn't happen, but it's not what I really want to happen. It's not going to be that thing that's in that perfect world. And this is, of course, not to say that we can't be critical of things and we can't want something to be different than it actually is. But I guess from where we are now to the perfect vegan world, the carnage world, there's going to be lots of steps to get there. And I think it's okay, you know, and it's good to celebrate what we perceive as moving along that those steps. Even if it's not like the perfect end line, we're still making progress. You know what I mean?
Paul, I feel like I've said this before. I'm going to say that a lot in this episode, I guess, but but I won't reference a previous episode. How about that? That like, I feel like I've gotten a lot softer on so many things over the course of this podcast, that I've become more understanding of things. And I don't know if that's just a function of being a quote unquote public figure and like understanding what it means to have your work critiqued publicly or whatever. But I do feel like part of that softness comes from being like, we need to enjoy the wins that we're getting right now. And we need to have a future where this is something I believe AFCO said, like, we're not just fighting to fight, like we're fighting to enjoy life as well. And part of that is acknowledging like the victories that you've made along the way, or even the slight progresses that you've made along the way.
Yeah, Andy, I think in that episode that you were just referring to, the legal battles one, I said something like, when we're picturing our perfect vegan world in which animal exploitation is, you know, illegal or something like that, would we not expect to see some of these things in the, you know, in the intermediate phase? We can't just zoom forward 50 years, 100 years and get to that place. There are going to be steps. Like, that's just to me at least, that just seems to be what the future would be like on that path. And so I think I can acknowledge that we're not there yet. I can acknowledge that maybe I would have done things differently, you know, on my high horse with my microphone, or not high horse, ooh, and my throne. There we go.
Your high tofu horse.
My high chair, sitting in my high chair with my microphone. Like, I can say I would have done things differently, but I can also be like, okay, but I can see this as part of the plan to maybe get to that place at the end, or to work towards that place. Cause like you said, maybe we'll never get to that perfect vegantopia. So yeah, I think like you, Andy, I think I've just gotten a lot softer about some of these things.
Yeah. And I think it's good. I don't know. Personally, I feel like I really want to embrace the softness at this point. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of power in sort of owning that softness and moving forward with softness. That doesn't mean you you can be firm even when you're soft, Paul. You can be forceful, you can be aggressive, you can have a very strong point of view. But personally, I'd like to see a little more softness.
Yeah. And Andy, I was thinking about softness, because that was one of the ideas where I'm like you said, it's one of the things that I've noticed about myself changing throughout the course of this podcast. And I feel like it can apply not only to, you know, you are soft with yourself, you are, you know, forgiving yourself or understanding of your shortcomings while you're still working on things. You can be soft with others, as we've talked about. I also think, you know, we can promote softness in our activism. And I do think that this can relate to veganism, though, because to in my mind, and you know, of course, there's different people, I think, Andy, are going to have different interpretations of what softness and being hard, what that means. But in my mind, I can see being hard as being one of the possible definitions, you know, being unempathetic and not caring. And the softness is caring for those who, you know, might be weaker than you or like, you know, I'm thinking of animals, Andy. I'm thinking of like being soft towards the creatures that many would deem as it's okay to exploit, and being soft towards these creatures and being like, no, you're just trying to exist and do your own thing, and I can appreciate that you're doing that. And Andy, I'm gonna read something to you. I already queued up Andy that this was gonna happen. This is
story time. I didn't know there was gonna be a reading today, Paul.
This is, Andy, an Instagram post of a picture of a Tumblr post of a poem. Very meta, being read now on a podcast, the fourth medium. I saw this post a few days ago and I was like, wow, this is really nice. And this just kind of, to me, this fit in with this whole softness. So this is a little thing I saw. It says, ever since I found out that earthworms have taste buds all over the delicate pink strings of their bodies, I paused dropping apple peels into the compost bin. Imagine the dark, writhing ecstasy, the sweetness of the apples permeating their pores. I offer beets and parsley, avocados and melon, the feathery tops of carrots. I'd always thought theirs a menial life, eyeless and hidden, almost vulgar. Though now it seems they bear a pleasure so sublime, so decadent, I want to contribute however I can, forgetting a moment my place on the menu. So at the end, it gets a little dark there because it's like, oh yeah, then we're going to die and worms are going to eat us. But beyond that, Andy, also I should say this is Feeding the Worms by Danusha Lamaris. And Andy, I was like, man, I wish everyone had that philosophy of just seeing these worms, these beings that the majority of people, myself included at times, Andy, you know, like don't think twice about, and just being like, hey, they experience joy in their own way. If I'm to take what this poem says to be true, which I am, with little to no research.
Very on brand.
They're experiencing this form of joy in their own way. And this softness to me, Andy, is, well, wouldn't I rather, you know, do something that is no consequence to me, give them a little bit more joy in their lives. And I just like, I loved that so much. I sent that to my partner. She said, why are you sending me stories about worms? And I was like, cause I just love this. I love this. So I just wanted to share that with everybody.
Getting emotional about worms, Paul. I love it. I think there's obviously so many different directions that we could take a conversation about like softness. And to me, it kind of harkens to the idea about like veganism or any justice being about compassion. And there's this conflict within veganism of people that are like, veganism is love and compassion, and others who say, no, it's rational logic and it's justice. And, you know, I think that it can be both, because I think that people think about compassion as being this sort of like really whimsical, soft kind of concept. But for me, when I think about compassion does involve things like direct action, like burning down systems of oppression, or it can be like forcefully stating your point of view, setting boundaries. It doesn't mean like being walked all over or like catering to other people in a way that's sort of not holding them accountable, Paul, you know, mm-hmm. Like it doesn't have to be all of those things. And I think that embracing the emotion that we all feel when we're experiencing activism, embracing the emotion that is a part of social change, embracing those things to me is like a really important part of moving forward. Because again, if I'm thinking about this world that we're living in this idealized future, it's not one in which everyone's going around and being like, I'm going to logic dominate you right now. You know, it's just, it feels like that's the antithesis of the world that I'm looking for, that I'm working towards. And Paul, through a YouTube hole today, rabbit hole, wormhole, today I happened upon a vegan debate bro debating a religious non-vegan whatever, and I was like, I haven't seen one of these in a while, let me kind of watch it. And after like 5 minutes I was just like, what is this? Who benefits from this? It's really just so each of these people can kind of prove how amazing and hard and logical they are. And it just is not something that exists for me in this world that we're like thinking about, you know?
You know, Andy, you just made me think of something that when I was in like late high school, early college, I feel like I was all about, and I've definitely talked about this on the podcast. Very early into the podcast, I was all about like positivity, and that's the thing. Like, that's the only thing that you need is positivity, and not that I'm against positivity, Andy, of course, but like that was like my thing. Is it was just like, oh, this is Paul. He's super duper positive, and that's all you need is to be positive about things, and everything works out perfect. And then I realized, and I like, you know, learned about toxic positivity culture, these sorts of things that you can't always positive every problem away. And I became, Andy, and this is what I'm just realizing now, or remembering, recalling, understanding about myself, like I became rational. Like, that's what I need to be, is rational. And I just need to be rational about everything. I can rationalize, you know, my emotions and my issues, and that will solve all my problems. And I feel like throughout these discussions that we've had, and the very related to these things we're talking about now, I feel like I've moved on past that, where I'm not irrational, Andy, and I do think being rational has its importance, but I feel like I've kind of like moved on to something else that I'm just going to say, I don't need a single word to define, you know, my state of being. So I'm not even going to try to find one single word to do that. But I don't know. I'm just, I guess, reflecting on this personal journey that I've been on for the last couple decades.
That's really beautiful, Paul. I remember positive Paul, very Andrew W.K. heavy, although I'm sure you still like Andrew W.K., but that sort of that whole world. And yeah, I mean, I think that obviously, Paul, as straight white men, we're the pinnacle of rationality and logical thought, right? totally a joke and sarcasm, people, that like I too was like logic. And I think that also kind of goes back to the learning talking points. Like, it's like, we just want to learn how to shut somebody down in a conversation or in a debate or something like that. And that is just, as we've covered in our Don't Debate Me Bro episode, it's like the opposite of what I want right now in activism. And even, you know, we even touched on this a bit in last week's episode, where I was like, I want to stop thinking about people as like numbers to be converted and processed through this system. And I've logicalized this person, and now I can check them off as the box is like, I made this person vegan and send them on their way. It's not a part of a vision of like a collectively liberated society, a free society, whatever, however you want to classify it. It's just like not a part of that anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that, Andy. I'm right there with you.
So, Paul, before I bring up this next vision of the future, I do want to just send a nice shout out, a huge thank you to our most recent Patreon donors, our wonderful patrons. The biggest of shout outs to Jess A.
Michael L.
And we also got an increase from Jeff W. So, yeah, huge thank you to everybody that does help to financially support the podcast. We're entirely listener funded. That's how we keep the lights on in this ramshackle show that we have here, that's held together with duct tape and positive but not rational thinking. I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Compassionate
right now.
Thinking held together with softness.
So just really appreciate everybody who helps pitch in if they are financially able. Obviously, please don't send us money if it would cause you any sort of financial hardship. But it is very meaningful to me, and I assume to you as well, Paul, that people resonate with what we're doing to the point where you want to financially support it. So just big thank you to all the patrons.
Yeah. And you know, Andy, we've gotten tons and tons of nice messages from people throughout the course of this podcast, and it's always very encouraging. And I'm, like you said, I'm glad that some of the things we're saying resonate with people.
Absolutely. So I want to expand a bit on something that I mentioned earlier in the show, that you know, of course, this idealized future would not be one that is based on domination. It would not be based off of systems of oppression. And that so often I feel that within our activist spaces, and I'll say certainly to a, I think, a pretty great extent, even in like the non-activisty vegan spaces, even in like the comment section on a Vez News article, I feel like so often we're just sort of replicating this desire for domination that just seems to be endemic within activism. And I feel like so much of our activism is really just based on replicating like a very punitive model of forward progress. It's really sort of this like very like carceral, like dominating kind of mindset. And you know, this is a conversation I've had with so many people that I feel like often doesn't really happen like out in the open. But I find that when I talk to people like one-on-one or in a small group, so many people are just like terrified of their fellow activists. And something that I touched on in the last mailbag episode that we did, Paul, was the amount of people that email us and start their email with like this really lengthy, I have this question, I don't know if I'm using the correct words or if I'm approaching this in the correct way, so please don't take this in the bad way, but I have this question about something. And this kind of goes to the caveat that I gave at the start of this episode, Paul, but in that mailbag, I expressed that it makes me sad that that is something that has to get thrown out in front of these things. You know, there's a lot of people that just want to waste your time and with bad faith questions and stuff. But I think we also should have the ability to discern people within our movement or even like new people coming in that have genuine questions about things, and recognizing that there are lots of really sticky, messy, not clearly defined gray area type issues. And that there's a lot of people who haven't been devoting the time to learning the perfect terminology to describe everything. And that I just feel like so much of our activism is based off of like monitoring individual people for like the perfect post about this, the perfect language about this. They didn't speak about this thing, but they did speak out this thing. So they must care about that thing. And so again, in this future, that does not exist. Like this surveillance mindset that is both, I think, about surveilling your fellow activists, as well as even just sort of surveilling yourself and feeling like you have to be very careful about how you approach things. And not that you shouldn't learn how to communicate well and all of that kind of stuff, but I feel like it's very much to the detriment of the movement, Paul.
Yeah, Andy, I am definitely with you with all of that thing. And this just kind of reminds me of this post I saw today about the importance of intention plus effort. And it's both of those things in conjunction kind of dictate that to me. It's like you are moving in the right direction. Your intentions are good, and you're also putting in the effort to become a, you know, better person, whatever that means in that situation. So I feel like that kind of, just reminded me of sort of what you were saying, in that this sort of surveillance culture doesn't, in my opinion, or I guess in my mind, doesn't really take those things into consideration.
Yeah. I mean, Paul, that's one of like the big things everyone's supposed to be in lockstep about, which is that intentions don't matter. And I think that if you are a person who has messed up and caused harm, even if you had great intentions, it's still on you to, like, you can't be like, oh, my intentions were good. You know, like, I don't think that's the way you need to respond. But I do think that the people that are coming to that person can measure the person's intentions, or can at least do some amount of effort to try to understand those things. And I feel like that is where intentions like do matter on some level. So, you know, it's just like one of those things where I'm like, I don't feel like I am allowed to critically think about that, right? Because there is this talking point that we're all supposed to memorize and put out there and follow through with. And I think that's, again, I think that's really just sort of to the detriment of the movement, to the detriment of the future that we want to see, because the future that I want to see is not one in which we are unnecessarily tearing people down and treating them as disposable. I remember a time when I had some friends who were experiencing some pretty harsh public scrutiny, I guess we'll say. And I just sort of reached out to offer some kind words. And they were so relieved because they assumed that I was just going to be done with them. And I was shocked to think that like they would think that that's how I was going to react to this whole thing. But I feel like so many of us are just kind of walking around assuming that we're just sort of at this point where if we mess up in whatever way it is, that all of a sudden we are disposable. And I don't want a world in which we're treated as disposable.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty shitty world, Andy.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess just sort of like ending this, like, I think obviously we can use some of these tools to attack like systems of oppression and larger institutions or whatever, but sort of the, like the horizontal violence that I think that happens within activist spaces is something that it's not something that I want to be a part of. And it's not something that is, in my opinion, a part of a just and equitable world.
I mean, it also seems like it would be detrimental to reaching that end goal anyways.
Yeah, Paul, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Paul, the last thing that I want to talk about, and I guess even just sort of elaborate on a point that I brought up earlier, is that the future that I want and the stepping stones to get there are ones that not just encourage people to, you know, do self-care, community care, but like one in which our activism incorporates rest and like, I don't know, pleasure, fun into it. And that we don't view that as someone taking time off of activism, taking away from activism, but that is like viewed as the same thing as somebody taking a breath when they come up while they're swimming. You know, that is like a vital function of being an activist, of being a human being on this planet. And I just feel like there's so much pressure for people to keep going, 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 and to not step back. And if they do step back, that they're not a good activist. And I would just like to see us enjoying our time right now in the midst of all the fighting that's getting done.
Yeah, Andy, you know, I feel like I catch myself sometimes with this, having this shock when I hear about, you know, some of my favorite activists or whatever doing something for fun. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like they can have fun too. Like they're human beings capable of enjoyment as well. And then, you know, when I think about it, I'm like, of course, that's absurd. That's silly that they wouldn't be, you know, doing fun things. But it is something that, you know, it's not good when I reflect upon it, Andy. It's not good that in my mind, it's shocking when the people who I perceive as like doing amazing work, the best activists in my mind, like it's shocking to me that they also have fun. You know, that's not good. And I need to break out of that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's definitely some activists that I've gotten to know over the years and their public persona, whether that's through the speeches that they give or like their internet presence or whatever, is one in which it's like all work and no play. And then you sort of get to know those activists and you're like, oh, this activist loves to do some real fun, goofy stuff on their off time that is just not a part of their public image whatsoever. But, you know, seeing some people that are really seasoned, really been doing this for a really long time, and then knowing the things that they like to do to unwind, which are the things that I like to do to unwind, it's really illuminating to me. And it really makes me think, oh, yes, this can be a part of our activism. But I feel like even if we all kind of sort of partly know it, or some of us know that and understand that, recognize that, it's not a part of like the talking points at the animal rights conference or something like that. I'm sure there's been a self-care panel, but you know, like in general, it's not like a part of, if you want to be an activist, you should go and leaflet and you should talk to your college cafeteria and you should make sure you are taking all this time off and doing, going and seeing a movie, you know, whatever it might be. Like, it's just not inherently a part of that. And I would like to see that be more a part of it, you know?
Yeah. That also, I think, Andy, speaks to the culture that we've talked about before in some animal rights organizations where the expectation, I think this is related, you know, the expectation is you will work very, very hard for very little pay. You know, I think it's not the exact same thing, but it's the same idea that you are expected to be an activist 24/7 and give up some of these other aspects, whether give up, you know, financial stability, give up the fun things that you like doing. So I definitely think it's, it makes me think of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not directly related, but it's definitely kind of like a cousin, I think, of what I'm talking about and a cousin of what a cousin twice removed now, like moving down the line is this culture of like martyrdom and self-flagellation within the vegan movement that like we feel like we have to constantly be punishing ourselves, whether that's through looking at all this graphic footage and re-traumatizing ourselves and then passing that trauma on to others. You know, like I feel like that is a part of that. That's like, well, I'm working for animals. I should not get paid well. Like they have it so much worse than me. I would rather work minimum wage more hours than I'm supposed to than be a, you know, a mother pig in a crate, something, you know, and that mindset, like it can help drive us when we're obviously thinking about what the animals are going through and how we have it so much better. But it doesn't need to mean that we live miserable lives as a result of it.
And Andy, I think relating back to the last point that you made before this about, you know, like the horizontal violence and stuff like that, I would like to see a world where that point that you just made isn't used against other people. You know, like in addition to us not putting this pressure on ourselves, also not doing that to other people, saying like, you know, you're a bad activist or something like that because, well, the animals have it terrible, so you should be doing this, you should be doing XYZ because of how bad the animals have it.
Yeah. Paul, I feel like for this episode we need this flow chart that probably looks much more like the It's Always Sunny meme with like all the red yarn and all these things. So they feel like we're like, and this connects to this thing and this connects to this thing and this over here. And that's kind of a cousin of that. You know, in my mind, it's all interconnected. And I know that at the beginning of this episode, we started out saying we don't want to have an episode where we're telling people what not to do. And I feel like we're still, the way we frame this conversation is a lot of like, I don't want to see this anymore, but I hope it can help us imagine and think about what are we actually filling our activist spaces with? What intentions are we bringing into the work that we are doing? And how can that inform the way that we move forward? And what can we fill up that future with so that it's a good place to step into and not just one in which everything has burned down, including our fellow activists, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You're right, Andy. It's hard. It's hard not to talk in the way that we've been talking for so many episodes. But I do hope that people do take away positives from this.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Paul, speaking of this importance of learning to rest and I think set boundaries, we as a podcast, we have a pretty big announcement right now, and that is that next episode, episode 300, will in fact be the final episode of the Bearded Vegans podcast.
Yeah, we had lots of discussions, I would say, Andy, about 15 weeks ago, 15 episodes ago, where we kind of came to the conclusion and we were like, I think this is the ultimate path forward. And, you know, 300 seems like one great number to end on, classic movie. And
Paul, you don't want to try to push it to 311.
Oh man. But then you get to 311, you got to go to 420 and it just keeps going.
A funny note? I guess 666 beyond that would be funny.
And then that's it. No more funny numbers. Funny numbers. And Andy, I feel like we felt that 15 episodes gave us a good amount of time to finish a lot of episodes that we had been planning to do for a while and just kind of take the podcast to this nice natural conclusion where we can feel like we've said all the things that we wanted to say or we had been planning to say.
Yeah, the eagle-eared listener might have noticed that over the course of the last, especially 10 episodes, that we've constantly been saying, so we've been working on this one for a while, and and this is something we've been thinking about, and we're not sure what to say, but we really want to get into it. And all of that was us kind of clearing our Google Docs, so to speak, and talking about some things that we really want to talk about. And also having a lot of the, you know, the bearded vegans all-star, so to speak, a lot of the guests that we are just so very fond of and had on the show multiple times. We wanted to get them back one last time. So, Paul, next week's episode, we are going to be talking all about why we reached this conclusion. We'll do a little reminiscing on the show, a little reflecting on the show. But for now, I think there's a couple of things that people probably have some big questions about. So, Paul, are we both still vegan?
Andy, yes, we are. Yeah, we're definitely both. We're definitely both still vegan. I think neither of us have. Well, I'll only speak for myself, Andy, and I'll let you speak for yourself. I have, you know, no concerns about that for me.
Yeah, same. Paul, are we still the best of friends?
The best of friends. Currently trying to navigate busy schedules so that we can watch an online magic show together in the coming weeks.
An online magic show in person.
In person, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I feel like Paul and I, we are solid. We've never been better. Our friendship is deeper than ever. We just sort of came to a point where we realized that the podcast is not working for either of us for different reasons, and we'll elaborate on those reasons in next week's episode. And just to say, like, some people might be like, oh, you're probably joking or you're just announcing a name change. No, in fact, the podcast is for real ending. I don't want to like kind of lead people on in that way. Paul, the other thing that I just want to address in this episode before we get to next week's episode, the big elaboration, is why we chose to announce it right now if we knew that it was going to be happening for quite some time. And I will say, of all of the things that we labored about, when to announce this was probably the one that we went back and forth on the most. I would say that for me personally, in my head, when we came to that conclusion was we will not announce it until episode 300. Like I was like, I don't want this to be a thing. I don't want to feel like it's this dragged out big end of an era kind of thing. Like I just want to do the work that we're doing under the same scrutiny that any other episode would be. And then of course, as we talked about it more, we're like, should we announce it like 10 episodes ahead or 5 episodes ahead? How were you feeling about when we should announce it when we first came to the conclusion, Paul?
Andy, I think I initially wanted to announce it right away. And then I think I kind of came around to some of the things that, some of the ways that I think you are feeling, which was like, it really would have changed, in my opinion, it would have changed like the tone of the last episodes. It would be like, oh, these are the Bearded Vegan's final 10 episodes. And that would have kind of been looming over, you know, the listeners as you listen to these last few episodes. And I feel like they wouldn't have had the same like vibe to them. And so instead, I hope that we've been able to, for the last, you know, 15 or so episodes, put out solid episodes that people enjoyed listening to, and they didn't have this extra kind of weight on them, I guess. So like Andy said, we more than anything else, we discussed when this announcement should happen. And I hope that, I hope people are understanding about why we chose to do it now.
Yeah. And Paul, as we were discussing when to announce this, one thought was, well, should we do it like 5 episodes before? Because, you know, the podcast that I listen to, that I feel the most attached to, where I feel like I have this kind of parasocial relationship with them, and they're my good friends I tune into every, you know, Thursday or whatever when the episodes drop. And I know that we fill that place for a lot of people that are listening as well, and that it can be hard when those things end because it feels like a relationship, a friendship that you had is ending. And so we wanted to be aware of that because there is sort of maybe this time that some folks might need to sort of, I guess, emotionally decompress from this whole thing. And so as we were juggling back and forth what to do, where I was on team episode 300 and Paul was on episode like, oh, maybe 3 or 4 episodes before, even though you, Paul, personally were like, I really want to just announce it like very much towards the end, is that you said something to me that's like, if we announce it earlier, is that for other people or is that for us? And like, if we're doing what we want and a part of ending this podcast is doing what's best for us, is that we should announce it later. And so our middle ground, even though it's not quite the middle ground, is that we're announcing an episode ahead of time just to give people a chance to come to terms with that, I guess. And I'm sure that for some people listening, you're like, wow, you guys are really full of yourselves and all that. But, you know, we do receive some really deep, meaningful messages from people about the place that we do fill in their lives. So we hope that people are understanding of the podcast ending. Again, we'll explain all about next week. Understanding and respectful of our decision of when to announce the ending of the podcast.
Yeah. So next week we'll get all up in it, Andy, talking about what our decision was and kind of all that good stuff. And for all the Patreon people out there, we'll also be posting something in the Patreon kind of explaining what's going on with all that stuff as well. So you have that to look forward to.
Absolutely. So in the meantime, huge thank you to everybody that's been a part of this thing for so long. You can always send your thoughts into thebeardvegans@gmail.com. You can still send us your voices at...
Call them anytime you need with your moral quandaries. It's 3237 Beardo.
And we look forward to hearing from you. And Paul, I look forward to doing this one last time with you next week.
In person.
Very excited about that.
Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a hot minute since we've done an in-person one. So, yeah. Andy, I will see. Well, I was about to say, I'll see you then. I will also probably talk to you every single day in between that.
Yes, absolutely. And Paul, it has also been a hot minute since you've said the following seven words.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.